close to wrapping up with the great sage Huang Po. But there are a few more of his teachings that are extremely on point. Someone asks him a question. This is teaching 34 on page 61, if anyone cares about that. The question is, what is meant by relative truth? And Wang Po's answer is, what would you do with such a parasitical plant as that? There's no such thing as relative truth. Why would he deal with such a delusion? He's here to teach truth. Someone's asking him about delusion. Are you more interested in delusion or are you more interested in the truth? There can't be such a thing as relative truth. Now, what he's responding to implicitly are all the teachings of the Hinayana Buddhists, the Theravadins of Sri Lanka, and of course the Tibetan Buddhists with all their Baroque multiplicities of deities and Dhyani Buddhas and all kinds of relative realities of Buddhas, sentient beings, bodhisattvas striving to become Buddhas, all of that. None of that is real. He says, throw that all out. It's a parasite in your mind. So this two truths theory there of the Tibetans, that there's absolute truth and relative truth, it's impossible. If there's absolute truth, then the relative is not true. So at most we can say there's 1.5 truths, okay? Because there's, at the relative level, what seems like truth is always only a paranoid projection. And the ego doesn't want to get that. It wants to believe that its projections are reality. But they have nothing to do with reality. But until you throw them out, you can't even know what is the real. Reality, says Wang Po, is perfect purity. Why base a discussion on false terms? Okay, what does he mean by perfect purity? We're not talking about some moralistic purity of somebody who doesn't drink or have sex or, you know, do things that are against the rule-based dharma that appears in the relative world. No, he doesn't care about that. Perfect purity means your mind does not get snagged by any delusion. You're never in Maya. You have never lost sight of who you are. But who are you? You're not the ego in the world. That's the illusion. That's a mental object that appears to you. You can't even say your total consciousness because there is no totalization of it. But what you are when you have let go of all the concepts and the percepts that come from the relative is the purity of that absolute self that cannot be named or found within any cosmic matrix. So I was talking to a group of yogis yesterday and saying that one of the three principles that we must keep in mind is that of downward causation rather than the belief in upward causation of the reductive scientistic mind, which says that you have to imagine that everything is coming together as a conglomeration of random parts that are interacting, rather than of a whole that is producing those parts and choreographing their interaction. But actually, it's not even downward causation. Really, it'd be more accurate to say it's inward causation from an all-encompassing consciousness that manifests as the cosmos, but is always beyond the whole of the cosmos. but for whom the cosmos appears as a whole. But neither the whole nor all of its parts have any real existence. They are all relative. So the absolute is beyond even a concept of wholeness, because there are no boundaries, so the whole has no... There is no point at which you can say, this is the whole, unless you have reached the absolute. Okay. The other two principles, of course, are the teleological drive, which means you have to recognize that you're being pulled from the future and you're being opened up by your own destiny that is at work. But you also have to realize that the past is also the future, because time is cyclical. So that all of the entire sutratma of your being is present at this moment. And it's a taut tightrope that you're walking on. But the more that you are aware of the end point of that, which is the absolute, the more that that can be brought into the present. And the third principle that I mentioned, that I might as well also share with everyone, is the cunning of the Tao. In other words, the Tao, the intelligence that underlies and pervades all. We could say it's the equivalent of the logos in the Western tradition. The cunning of that logos or Tao creates synchronicities in which completely unplanned and unplannable and unpredictable events will occur that will create windows of opportunity that could not have been thought about or imagined by the ego, that will enable an opening into a higher level of consciousness if you're willing and have the courage to take the leap. But it will usually have to come in the form of bad karma, of what the ego will call bad karma. If it wasn't for bad karma, nobody would be in this ashram. Okay? One comes here because of suffering, because of glitches, because of errors that are made, because the ego mind is projecting inaccurately upon a real that is going to resist those projections in order to awaken you. So every bad karmic event is a blessing, because the entire reality is benevolent, because the intelligence that is underlying and manifesting it all is only wanting your awakening to the blissful nature of what you really are, even if it has to shake you awake by some event that causes pain. Okay, so Wangpo goes on. To be absolutely without concepts is called the wisdom of dispassion. Okay, so dispassion is not simply detachment from other people or from possessions, property, etc. No, it is the letting go of concepts. That's much more difficult, because concepts are the real riches that we hold on to. The belief that we can control things through our mind, through our ability to grasp things intellectually. No, it is that that has to be released. Okay, so every day, whether walking, standing, sitting, lying down, and in all of your speech, remain detached from everything within the sphere of phenomena. Whether you speak or merely blink an eye, let it be done with complete dispassion. Now we are getting toward the end. He's talking about time now. We're getting toward the end of the third period of 500 years since the time of the Buddha. And most students of Zen now cling to all sorts of sounds and forms. So he's saying that Buddha and the Buddhist tradition is aware that we are declining, we are falling into more and more dense levels of consciousness, until in the end of Kali Yuga there will be total destruction, because the mind will have become too dense to be able to manage its illusion of reality, and all of its need for awakening can only come through a total destruction of the planet. That's what it will take to bring us back into the light that is beyond life and death. But he's saying already people who should be meditating in utter silence are actually involved with sounds whether it's the shabda that's heard inside, or it's somebody's tinnitus, or it is some thought pattern or some song that one can't get out of one's head, or it's some words that one wants to scream out at someone but can't do it, or it is some other form, whether it's a pornographic form or a form of some form of monstrous fear or toxic shame, shameful scenario, whatever it might be. The mind is attracted and snagged by these things. And so even the Zen monks can't meditate anymore. This is already happening in 800 AD. Imagine what's happening now. I don't want to think about it. Okay. So, why do they not copy me by letting each thought go as though it were nothing, or as though it were a piece of rotten wood, a stone, or cold ashes of a dead fire? Why aren't you letting go of the ego? It's dead already. Why haven't you killed it? It's a zombie that is usurping your consciousness and causing you to lead a very petty life instead of the life of the infinite self. Or else, he says, by just making whatever slight response is suited to each occasion. So he's saying, be accurate and spontaneous and in accord with the Tao, but don't have any interest in the phenomenal horizontal plane. This gets back to the meaning of the cross in Christianity. It's the vertical, the relationship of the individual consciousness to the infinite consciousness that is merely mirrored and reflected fractally in your relationship with any individuals or with nature and the planet as a whole in the phenomenal horizontal plane. But as above, so below, there will be a synchronistic repetition of the theme. But you cannot solve the problems at the phenomenal level, which are only a reflection of your vertical disconnect from God consciousness. And when that has been resolved, then you will see that the manifest world becomes a reflection of that purity of the infinite self that creates then a new world that is beautiful and without glitches. So, he's saying, if you do not act thus in accord with the Tao, then when you reach the end of your days here, you will be tortured by Yama. Yama, the lord of the death, the lower death drive. And you don't want to be tortured. Most people are already tortured by Yama while they're still alive because they feel the shame and the guilt of not growing and taking the upper death drive into God consciousness. So instead of the bliss that one could be experiencing now while alive, they're in a state of suffering, because they're paying attention to the ego mind's projection of its own paranoid fears. And there are so many dissociated fragments of the ego today that those fractured thoughts of parts of yourself that you're not even aware of, parts of the false self, but that are still identified with, will only be perceived through karmic blowback and through the somatization of thoughts that you cannot bear to think, and therefore you have to put into the body and get sick. So, you must get away from the doctrines of existence and non-existence. For mind is like the sun, forever in the void, shining spontaneously. Shining without intending to shine. The sun doesn't think, oh, I should shine today on those poor beings on the earth. No, it's an automatic, spontaneous process. Your own shining of your infinite love must be of the same nature, not the result of some thought process. Nor can you conceptualize whether the world exists or doesn't exist. It is both. Because it is an unreality and a flux, but it is one that is representing the symbolic information that you have not yet internalized. So the dream is there to give you back what you have lost by projecting out your own God consciousness, which has created the manifestation of an illusory life. Okay. This is not something which you can accomplish without effort, says Wangpo, but when you reach the point of clinging to nothing whatsoever, then you will be acting as the Buddhas act. So ask yourself, do you still cling to anything? Or have you reached that point where you don't cling to anything or anyone whatsoever in order to be in your own essence? Are you free? Are you liberated? Or do you need to hold on to some grounding that is external, whether it's a person or money or an idea or a position or a job or it is some kind of relationship or whatever else? But be free of all clinging. This will indeed be acting in accordance with the saying, develop a mind which rests on no thing whatever. For this is the pure Dharmakaya, which is called Supreme Perfect Enlightenment, Samyak Sambuddha. If you cannot understand this, though, then though you gain profound knowledge from all of your studies of science, philosophy, etc., though you make the most painful efforts and practice the most stringent austerities, you can fast for long times, you can take a vow of silence, you can do all of that. It's to no avail if you're still clinging to anything whatsoever, including the belief that you exist. Okay, so if you, even if you do all of those ascetic practices, you will still fail to know your own being. All your effort will have been misdirected, and you will certainly join the family of Mara, which is one of the words for the devil, Satan, in the Buddhist lineage. What advantage can you gain from this sort of practice? As Qigong once said, he's another sage, the Buddha is really the creation of your own mind. In other words, if you're a Buddhist, you don't believe in a Buddha, because you realize that the Buddha is just a projection of the self. That's why if you meet the Buddha on the road, you kill it, right? Because you're projecting what isn't real. In the same way that Christians shouldn't believe that Christ was a guy who lived in Palestine 2,000 and some years ago. No, Christ consciousness is your own. It's your own self. If you think of it in any other way, you're in delusion. Okay, so the Buddha is the creation of your own mind. How then can he be sought through scriptures or through prayer or through whatever practices? Buddha is yourself. Though you study how to attain the three grades of bodhisattvahood and the four grades of sainthood and the 10 stages of a bodhisattva's progress to enlightenment, all those mythologies of religious Buddhism, that won't get you anywhere. Until your mind is, even if you study them all, until your mind is full of all that metaphysical junk, you will be merely balancing yourself between a concept of being ordinary and a concept of being enlightened. What good is that, since both of them are illusions? So not to see that all methods of following the Tao are ephemeral, and that this is called samsaric dharma. In other words, this is the relative dharma that has no validity. It won't get you out of the world into the transcendent real. And then he quotes a verse from the Song of Enlightenment. In its strength once spent, the arrow falls to the earth. You build up lives which will not fulfill your hopes. Your own life energy will wear out. Your body will die and fall to the ground and be buried or burned. What will you have gained with all of that effort? Your hopes will not be fulfilled if they are dependent on your identification with a body. How far below the transcendental gate from which one leap will gain the Buddha's realm? But are you willing to take that leap? The Buddha's realm, how far away is it from you? It can't be any distance whatever, except the distance of your own thought that creates the illusion of a distance. And as soon as you go beyond that conceptual stream of unconsciousness that keeps you unaware of the real truth and in the relative and the delusional, you cannot know Buddhahood. But Buddhahood is what you are. Know it by being it. Know it now without waiting, because the future never comes. Realize it now. Know the blissful self as what you are. Be free. There are no limitations. There are no enemies except your own ego. Kill it. Kill the illusion that there is anything to kill. Kill the illusion of the duality of existence and non-existence, life and death, appearance and disappearance. Be free of it all and realize the purity of the Absolute Self. May you know the peace that comes from having given yourself the gift of absolute dispassion. Dispassion from all concepts, from the ego mind itself, and for all of the phenomenal projections that create the illusion of a reality in a world. And thus may you have the peace that enables you to act in accord with the Tao, that optimizes the outcomes on the phenomenal plane as a mere byproduct of having maximized the relationship to the perfect purity of the Absolute Self. And may you abide fully and deeply in that purity of total, infinite, eternal peace, transcendent of all illusions, forever on the lotus throne of non-existent existence that enables complete freedom even within a world of total constraint, always beyond the illusion that reality is anything but the infinite benevolence of the absolute intelligence that is the love of God. Know that you are that.